Right now, it's time to bring in the dogs.
It is time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, MillertonVet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at the Millerton Veterinary Practice. I think we need to change the intro to get to add the yapping spaniel to it. The yapping blind spaniel, because people have called me in the last, I've been speaking to them on the phone or whatever, and they say, I can't hear you. How do you live with that noise? Can you shut that up?
What is she yapping at?
Whatever she can't see. I imagine, presumably it's the cat food.
Uh-huh.
She just stands there and yaps, speaks.
Maybe the cat food, anything to eat, I suppose.
Probably. Probably. Well, you know, she can sausage up really quickly, so we keep her on a somewhat restricted, mostly philosophically, her view is if she can't see it, it must be there.
That makes sense, and maybe the sausagey thing might help her when she bumps into things.
That's true. That part is a little sad. It's just like it's a little... Somebody once invented, I don't know if you come across them, they're like angel wings, or they're dog bumpers. But
they can attach to the collar, and they hang over, right, I have seen them, yeah, hang over the top of the head so that they can detect when they're going to bump into something. It's pretty cool.
Does it work?
Yes.
Possibly something that should
might
be invested.
Might be something, although I don't know how other dogs will react.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, hi.
As a toy, drag her around by her bumpers. that might happen at your house.
It might well. All right. Edris in Waterbury. Last month, I took my 7-year-old cat, Brunhilde, to the vet because her breath was bad, and it turned out she needed a whole bunch of teeth pulled. I feel so guilty, like I should have been doing something. I did adopt her when she was already 5, but even so, I feel like I could have done something to prevent this. The thing is, she hates it when I try to look in her mouth, which is why it happened, I guess. Anyway, if there's anything I can do from now on to preserve her remaining teeth, please advise me.
It's a tough situation with cats and their teeth. And, you know, one can only guess that it is the change in, as they have evolved into humans, the change maybe from real food, in part, the change from being fed scraps to being fed cat food. That they have all kinds of problems with the production of tartar, the production of what are called resorptive lesions, which are painful, and veterinary dentists don't really know why they, even with the research being done, don't know why they occur. And that heavy tartar in the mouth, we've been trying to battle that for years. 25 years ago, we used to tell people to definitely feed cats dry food, that it would help to keep the teeth cleaner, but that's not necessary. That isn't the case, actually. Studies have shown that the dry food forms a paste on the teeth and is more likely to stick on it. So think about a more appropriate diet, which would be a high-protein, low-carbohydrate, low-grain diet, not only good for their bodies, but good for their teeth. There is a product called Perio Powder, which is a probiotic, which helps to promote the growth of good bacteria in the mouth that will help to keep the tartar low. So tartar, plaque buildup, just as it is in people, is a combination of the minerals in the saliva and the bacteria in the mouth. So if we want to keep the bacteria low and the bad bacteria low and the good bacteria higher, Perio Powder can help with that. It's sprinkled on the food, very highly accepted by cats. You can sprinkle it on canned food. You can't sprinkle it on dry food, clearly. There is another product called Healthy Mouth, which is promoted by the Veterinary Dental Association, and it is a water additive. And it will actually has been proven to reduce the buildup of plaque in the mouth. If you can get a cat to eat a dental treat like greenies, and they'll chew them, so they're larger than the size of kibble. They'll chew the greenies with the back teeth. Those have also been proven to reduce the amount of plaque buildup. Starting your kittens when they're young, cleaning their teeth at home, getting them used to having their mouths handled. Even if you're putting toothpaste on a little cotton swab and rubbing it along the gums on the top of their arcade of teeth, because of course the top teeth are on the outside of the bottom teeth, or they should be. So it can be really difficult to get to the lower teeth. But the top teeth oftentimes have more tartar than the lower teeth. So getting them accustomed to that at a young age and doing it with training, so with training with a very special treat, is a good idea. We talk to people about it when they have kittens. But it is it's an ongoing problem. It's a problem that I have. Many of my patients come twice a year and I check their teeth. And occasionally I can scrape off a little tartar, but often they need to have an anesthetic procedure that involves cleaning their teeth, doing x-rays, and figuring out if there are painful teeth that need to be extracted.
And one of the things that I have found, to my chagrin, is that even though we do feed, I always blamed, just because I felt like it, I blamed the wet food. But it really doesn't make any difference, I don't think.
The genetics play a big part of it.
Then I guess, so far I'm batting 100 with genetically, batting 1,000, I should say, with genetically.
Because cats are not, there's no selection because they live with people now. There's no selection for bad teeth.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's interesting. One thing I did discover, though, because I have always been a dog toothbrusher, to my shock, absolute shock, the cat now in his dotage lets me brush his teeth.
Some cats really like it.
His remaining four teeth.
Yes. if they don't have pain, then they will like to have, and some cats will go ahead and try. I had a cat, Mingus, years ago, who tried to use our toothbrushes.
Right.
And he would rub them on the side of, or the hairbrush on the side of his face, pretty disgusting, in order to rub the itchies off of his gums. So if you catch them at the right time, they can enjoy it, and maybe not enjoy it, but they can put up with it.
Yeah.
They will put up with it.
And I will tell you this, the poultry flavor seems to be very popular.
It is. Vanilla mint for dogs. poultry for cats.
Oh, vanilla mint. They
We've
like
taken
that.
A survey.
So so dogs like vanilla mint. The malt was terrible, and I never moved on to vanilla mint because personally, I was admitting, they like that, huh?
They do.
I will be investigating that. All right. Kim in Poughkeepsie. Uh-oh. That's not always a good start. I volunteered to pet sit my brother's two ferrets while he's traveling, but now I hear that ferrets can carry some kind of salmonella. Is this for real? How can I be safe? I should say I have kids 10 and 13.
So there are lots of critters that can shed salmonella in their stools, and so really the best thing to do is to have good hygiene. It's difficult to do when you have small children, but not so difficult when you have bigger kids. So handling the ferrets. So number one, you want to have ferrets that are litter trained. So I'm assuming that these ferrets are, because you don't want ferrets pooping all over the house, and then it's going to be impossible to keep things clean. But if you've got the litter pan and maybe want to keep them confined to one room would be a good idea, and so they don't wreak havoc in the house. Or maybe they're in a cage, I'm not sure. But if you, after handling them, just make sure that you wash well. So salmonella is transferred often to people by food, but it would be hand to mouth. So you want to just make sure that you use really good hygiene and that should be, if your brother hasn't gotten any sick, that should be safety enough, unless you have a child who is immunocompromised or anyone in the house who is immunocompromised, in which case you shouldn't take the ferrets.
Right.
Unless they've been tested, but they can be intermittent shedders.
I guess the only thing I'm trying to...
ferret out.
The only thing I'm trying to ferret out here is, it sounds like if, I don't know, a lot of us have siblings, so you kind of should know, if you're volunteering, what the situation is, and if the situation is that they're litter trained and, you know, they're regular pets and that's why you volunteered, that's one thing. And if your brother's, let's just say, quote, wildlife type, and he just has all sorts of, like, rhinoceri running around his house, then maybe you should devolunteer. It kind of seems like that.
Yeah, and those parrots can be really fun and cuddly, and you know, so that's which is fun for kids, and I just think realistically, you know, taking some care about that and making sure that these are clean parrots. Parrots tend to clean themselves very well,
right.
So they're cleaning themselves. You know, don't let them lick faces, but as far as I know, I don't think they tend to do that. Handling them and then just washing up, maybe changing your shirt.
Right, and this is a good moment to also talk about soap and antibacterial soap, and so I'm going to turn the floor over to you, Dr. Cannon.
Well, you know, there's lots out there on the use of antibacterial soap, and that it's not necessarily recommended and the best thing for our skin or for the environment, and that soap in general was made to
clean
and to saponify things. You know, if you're using a lot of soap and water, you should be able to have pretty clean hands. I don't use antibacterial soap because I don't want that effect on my skin, but I don't want to be washing it down the drain. You know, we have to be really careful. I can do this whole environmental thing, but that's not this show. We just have to be more careful as a society about what we're putting down the drain, these little plastic particles that are being found in our water supply.
Right, and the only reason I'm really mentioning it is because when you say something like, oh, salmon, you know, the steps that one would normally go through, you know, some of them aren't there. So therefore you go, oh, salmonella, well, antibacterial. And I'm just trying to say, you know, actually soap and water, do good washing.
Soap and water, right.
You'll be fine.
Yep.
That's all. Okay, Tasneen in North Adams. Everywhere I go, I'm seeing CBD for pets. I really don't know how to navigate it all. Like, what is good? What is it good for? Like, how? Let's do that again. Everywhere I go, I'm seeing CBD for pets. I really don't know how to navigate it all. Like, what is it good for? How do you know if your pet would benefit from it? How do you know what dosage to use or what delivery systems are any good? Obviously,
that's a
don't
great
have them
question,
vape.
And I have the same problem. Number one, I am not legally. I can't really discuss CBD and the use for pets legally in the state of New York. So I can't really talk about it, but what I can give you some information, like every person who comes in has their little bottle of CBD, and almost every single bottle is from a different manufacturer. And so manufacturers can make it and target it toward pets, but veterinarians are not allowed to talk about it, which is so interesting because that leaves you to have to figure it out yourselves. I can tell you that everybody's using CBD for everything that you could possibly imagine, and I don't think that it's really the panacea that we think it is. Maybe we're not dosing it properly, but even with proper dosing, Dr. Rob Silver in Colorado has been working with all kinds of products from cannabis for many years, and he's got a book out about it. And even with the products that he has recommended in the past, I haven't seen very much in the way of success with, I mean, maybe a couple of animals for a couple of things like, seizure. But it has not been the panacea that I thought it should be. Cats and dogs, pets do have cannabinoid receptors in their nervous system. And so theoretically, the cannabinoids and the terpenes in CBD oil should be helpful, potentially, you know, specifically, I think, for seizure type or nervous system type problems and potentially for cancers, which it has been in people. But I am not, first of all, I can't talk about it, but I'm also not really privy yet to specifically where do you use it. You know, that's what I like about, you know, that's what I like about using Chinese medicine is that it is telling us so that, you know, you can have one problem, one animal with seizures or one animal with, you know, Cushing's disease, and there'll be 3 to 5 different Chinese medical diagnoses. based on the really their specifics, you know. So now we've got this sort of product that says, oh, it's good for this, it's good for that, it's good for this, but we're not looking at why is it good for this particular problem and what is, else is it about the individual that's making it work for them. And so there's just no way to know.
Right. And the other thing I want to throw in there, and Dr. Silver, I think I have heard him speak, and it's really interesting because this is so not black and white. And there's this massive confusion. I'm not just talking about CBD. There's this, because, again, we've all had our brains overscreened for the last 20-some-odd years, because there's targeted medicine, people conflate that with individual, with what you're saying about each animal is individual and what works for some doesn't work for others, but it's not the same thing. So at least I would think in a Chinese modality, it gives you the opportunity to explore the different possibilities, no?
It does, but yeah, but these herbs have been out there for, have been used and had written about for 3,000 years. So we're talking about CBD as a fairly new
entry.
Entity.
Right.
And so I have just, kind of thrown my hands in the air. When people bring things in, I say, I don't even know every single product. There's no regulation on it. So there's no regulation, and I am not allowed to advise on it.
And you can't talk about it. All right.
Yeah, so I talk about Rob Silver, and you can get his book.
Okay.
And I've forgotten the name of it. I have a copy. Actually, I loaned a copy to someone, and I haven't had it back yet.
I think that probably the best thing that you can stock up. See if you can get a bulk discount. All right. Lauren, New York City. I was at the dog run yesterday after heavy rain and watched dogs playing and peeing in the big puddles that had formed. And then the horrible sight of my dog drinking from that same puddle. Gross, but also worrying because my girl's 14 years old and pretty frail at this point. Plus, her tummy is easily upset. Should I be concerned?
Well, you know what? With a 14-year-old frail dog, I'd be a little concerned about going to the dog park to begin with because you don't know what she's going to be exposed to. With the puddles and urinating in the puddles, that's how leptospirosis is transferred, is through the urine and through the urine and into the mouth. So, that's not a great thing if you're having dogs from all over the place in this area, unless your dog is protected with a vaccination against leptospirosis. And there are different serovars of lepto pertinent to your area, so different strains, basically. That the vaccine covers. Typically, it will cover most of what's in your area, but there are many, many different strains. So, if she loves to go to the dog park, then I would just stay close and keep close tabs on what she's picking up there. So, no, I'm assuming people are careful about the stools, but if it's really wet, or if there are dogs there that might knock her over, or dogs that might be contagious. With things that she might not be protected against, then, be careful about that. Does that help? Does that answer the question?
Yeah, it's almost as though people need to modify their routines based on their dog's age. And
how much risk they're willing to take, right?
Right.
So is it high risk from usually people who bring their dogs to the dog park, I would have to say, are people who, go to the vet and keep up on things, but that's not always the case. So your risk is probably pretty low as far as getting leptospirosis at the dog park, but who knows? And that would be my only concern about drinking from those puddles, because it's usually pretty fresh water, and then it absorbs in. And dogs, they're disgusting. They'll drink. Some dogs will drink other dogs' urine after they urinate. Typically, it's not going to upset their stomachs, and cause all kinds of problems, but can potentially transmit disease.
Right. So it's the other thing that Lauren could do is, just based on a vet work, is go talk to her vet.
His vet. Yes, because it depends on the area, right?
Right.
Depends on where you are, whether they've seen lepto. Is your dog protected against leptospirosis?
And, if this is the really interesting thing that I've always found. People's perceptions of their dogs and actual veterinary perception can be completely different, even though they're looking at the same thing. And that is one of the benefits of having a good relationship with a veterinarian, because they feel things, they see things, they know things that you as an owner don't necessarily know. So, you know, your dog may look frail and you may be worried, but in fact, you know, it could be just, you know, healthy as a horse, basically, and they do know the area, and it might be okay.
Mm-hmm.
By the same token, they might say, hey, you know, you probably want to just relax. I just know a couple of people with older dogs who have, by speaking to their vets, gotten some real good guidance about what they can and cannot do that they couldn't necessarily come to on their own.
Good advice.
So I'm going to throw that out there. All right, Evan, in Hartford, me and my boyfriend just got our first ever cat. He's about 2 years old and neutered and an adorable chunky boy. The other night we noticed that Odie seems to wheeze a bit when he's asleep, or maybe it's just snoring. It sounds like a very slight whistle on the exhale. Should we get this checked out, or is this normal?
If Odie is not wheezing while he's up and around and not coughing, then it probably is just the key word here may be chunky. If he's a bit overweight, then the more overweight they are, the more they'll wheeze when they sleep. And it really is just a matter of, this excessive tissue that is around the opening of the airway, and they're lying down and it's being malformed into an area that's going to be cause noise when you breathe in and out. So I have seen that before lots of times in overweight cats.
And then, of course, that's the hard question of...
Of how do you lose weight. But if Odie is great and fine and can run like mad and not wheeze, it's unlikely that there's a problem. But if that's not the case, then going to the vet is a really good idea, because if there's a mild case of, even a mild case of asthma, which is allergic in origin in cats, then there's lots of things to do to take care of that. But the weight is another story, and the weight is always hard, and cats can be bullies. And, cats can be bullies, especially to older people. They can really, have people, because these older people are at home, and if they don't feed the cat, then the cats are just,
cats can be menaces.
They can scratch them, attack their ankles, and sometimes
trip them.
So they'll do whatever it takes to get the food.
Yeah.
And crash things off the counter.
And I have on-site experience with the... I am summoned to the feeding trough by the sound of all of the Chinese medicines being knocked systematically.
There you go.
And yeah. I will tell you that little monster... manage to, if you score a direct hit, that's always fun when you somehow, some miracle, the thing opens, the bottle opens. If it hits the right spot, the bottle will open. Mm-hmm. And one does have the privilege, for example, of coming in and seeing just lots of tablets all over the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So there's... There is something to be said for having a menace cat when you're trying to die... it's not for the faint of heart, so you can see where they...
It's not, and it's not for... And it's a big discussion, probably for another day.
All right, then we will have it on another day. Thank you very much, Dr. Cannon.
Thank you.
This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com.